He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there.
Don't
I
know.
Mean, she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Tuesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, a little before dark tonight. 10 for Rick Ballew the rest of the week, 6 to 8 here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM with J.J. LaSelva. The Hacker, Ryan Green, with you. Glad you are with us as we are now on the doorstep of Jaguar rookie minicamp. They will get on the field, I believe, Thursday. We will be down there on Friday. Looking forward to that. And I believe the rookie minicamp goes through Saturday. So we'll talk about some of the rookies. We'll dissect the draft class a little bit, as we have really since the draft ended about a week and a half ago. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of these guys out on the field on Friday when the media can go out there and take a look. We'll obviously talk a lot about the Jaguars. I got a thought about the collapse at the end of the 2023 season, one that I haven't really thought of, honestly, until 10 minutes before airtime tonight. JJ and I were talking, it just kind of hit me, and we'll get into that here in a matter of moments. So a lot of Jaguar talk, including former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. Clay spent almost a decade in the National Football League, three of those years right here in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. He does a lot of work now covering the National Football League, but there is no doubt that Clay Harbor still loves his Jacksonville Jaguars. So we'll not only talk about the draft, but the offseason. I haven't really talked to Clay since the season ended, so we'll talk about the offseason that has been. We'll also preview rookie minicamp with former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. That comes up in about 15 minutes or so. And at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, my buddy Sean Devaney, Heavy.com. He has covered the NBA for years. I've had him on Hacker After Dark for years. We'll talk a little Orlando Magic, put a final wrap on their season. And we'll talk NBA playoffs, the conference semis. Jalen Brunson of the Knicks is just on another planet right now. He's playing out of his mind. The defending world champions just got absolutely boat raced at home last night by Minnesota. And the two other series begin tonight, Cleveland and Boston, and then finally Dallas and Oklahoma City. So Sean Devaney, Heavy.com, talking NBA, comes up at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. But as we tend to do here on Hacker After Dark, we will kick it off with a little thought on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Every night here on HAD, we do give you a big deal of the night. And J.J. LaSelva, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
So as I was thinking aloud about 15 minutes ago, you know, we've spent so much time since January 7th, right? The loss in Nashville to end the year. Though they lost 5 out of 6. Biggest late season collapse in franchise history. And yeah, it was the biggest late season collapse in franchise history. But if you think about before that, right? They started 8-3. They ended 6-1 in 2022. Remember, they won 6 games in a row before ultimately losing to Kansas City in the divisional round. Let me do my Wolfson math on that. 6-1 to end 2022, 8-3 to begin 2023. In 18 games, the Jaguars were 14-4. 14-4 in the 18 games prior to the collapse where they lost 5 out of 6. So what happened? What on earth happened? Did it all come down to Christian Kirk getting hurt on Monday Night Football? I don't know. They still scored a lot of points in that Bengal game. They scored a lot of points against Cleveland. They put up a decent amount of points against Tampa Bay. Granted, some of it was garbage, but they scored. It wasn't as if the offense was inept after Christian Kirk left. What was the issue? How does an NFL team go from 14-4 in an 18-game stretch over two seasons to losing 5 out of 6 and missing the playoffs in 2023? That's a tough one, man. Obviously, something happened to this team. What was that something? Maybe we'll never know. Maybe we will find out one day. But I think it's pretty interesting, and we talked about this at the time. If the Jacksonville Jaguars won that game in Nashville week 18, finished 10-7 as opposed to 9-8, and were back-to-back AFC South champions, which they would have been if they would have beaten Tennessee. Everything was the same except they win week 18. Is Mike Caldwell still here? Are those 10 assistant coaches still here? Or did it all come down to the fourth quarter in Nashville? How are you going to fire a defensive coordinator after back-to-back AFC South championships? How are you going to retool your assistant coaches, letting 10 of them go after back-to-back AFC South championships? Or were there deeper issues? Did it not just come down to week 18? Was this something that was brewing under the surface? Again, very odd that this team went 14-4, 6-1 to end the 2022 campaign, 8-3 to begin the 2023 campaign, and then just all of a sudden lose 5 out of 6. And by the way, the defense was not all that banged up. Those were your guys on defense. Those were the guys you rode for that most of that 14-4 stretch in the previous 18. Offensively, yeah, Zay Jones was in and out of the lineup. You had some issues on the offensive line. Of course, the big one was Christian Kirk. Heck, Trevor Lawrence missed the game they won, right? He missed the Carolina game. That's the only game they won of the last 6. But he was not 100%, granted. But, man, I'm surprised that there are some people that are, you know, asking questions now. And if you've seen social media today, some things have been brought to surface. If you listen to 1010XL in the last day or two, some things have been brought up, sources and whatnot. I don't know about sources. I don't know what to believe. What I do know is this. The reality for this football team is you go 14-4 in 18 games, and then you go 1-5. That, to me, is odd. And as a result of 1-5, you let go a defensive coordinator and you let go 10 assistant coaches. And by the way, you also let go defensive starters and Fadakasi, Williams, Jenkins. Calvin Ridley was gone, even though I believe they tried to bring him back. A lot of veterans like DeJuan Smoot, Jamal Agnew, Trey Herndon. A lot of turnover, right? A lot of change on this roster, and most, if not all, of those guys were a part of that 14-4 run. They were also a part of that 1-5 run. I remember week 18, that loss in the locker room. You had players talking about, you know, maybe not following game plans, maybe doing their own thing, maybe freelancing a little bit, right? It's interesting. And here we are 4 months later still talking about it. See, the collapse at the end of last year is going to do one of two things. And I don't really think there's a lot of gray area. It's going to do one of two things. It's either going to rejuvenate this roster and going to fire this roster up, like we've heard Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence say publicly. Doug Peterson said he'll probably never get over the collapse. Trevor Lawrence says if you don't use that as motivation, it's a waste. I agree with that, by the way. And I hope that's what the collapse last year at the end of the year does. I hope it motivates. I hope it rejuvenates. whatever verbiage you want to use, this roster that was 14-4 in the previous 18 contests, or that collapse is going to stick around for a while. That collapse is going to percolate and brew. That's what you don't want to happen. You want to flush that for the most part. Yes, use it as motivation, but you also want to move on. Have the Jaguars moved on? I don't know. We haven't gotten a chance to talk to a lot of the veterans yet. Some we have. We'll get much more of an opportunity once OTAs arrive. Much more of an opportunity when minicamp gets here. By the way, OTAs are in less than 2 weeks. Minicamp is in just over a month. And we're 2.5 months away from training camp. It's around the corner. It's getting here. The hope is the collapse motivates this team to not let that happen again, learn from it, and grow. What you don't want is for the collapse to still brew, still percolate, still have issues 4, 5, 6, 7 months later. I don't expect that to happen, but it could. Because, again, you lose 5 out of 6. You become only the 6th team since the year 2000 to begin a year 8-3 and miss the playoffs. That's a collapse of pretty good proportion. You know, we talk about it being the biggest late-season collapse in Jaguar history. It was one of the biggest in the NFL over the last quarter century. Again, only 5 teams prior in the previous 23 years started 8-3 and missed the postseason. The Jaguars were number 6. What will that do the end of 2023 to the 2024 roster? That's the question. And we'll start getting that answered when the rookies show up, but certainly when the veterans, OTAs and minicamp and whatnot, begin to get on the field here in a matter of weeks. Jaguars better come to play in 2024, too. The Tennessee Titans sign another guy today. We'll talk more about this later on. Tyler Boyd, former Cincinnati wide receiver, reunites with Brian Callahan. The Titans are going to figure out what they have with Will Levis, and they're going to figure it out this year. Huge money with Calvin Ridley. Pretty good money with Tony Pollard. Pretty good money with Lloyd Cushenberry, the center. Now you add Tyler Boyd to DeAndre Hopkins and Tajay Spears. Tennessee is putting a lot of their chips in the table on offense. I don't think they're going to stop anybody on defense. Their secondary, their linebackers are still pretty average to below average. Their D-line's all right. Although, remember, they lost to Nico Autry, which is a big loss. Tennessee's going to try to outscore people. And they got some guys now. They got some older guys, right? DeAndre Hopkins is north of 30. Ridley's going to be 30 in December. Tyler Boyd's going to be 30 in November. I'm not sure how many NFL teams have 3-plus 30-year-old wide receivers on their roster. Tennessee will have that in December. But you want to find out what you got with a rookie quarterback. I tip my cap to Tennessee. They are going to find out. Because they are going all in to bring Will Levis some playmakers, albeit some veteran playmakers. You add that with obviously what Houston has done. Danielle Hunter, Danico Autry, Joe Mixon, just to name a few. Indianapolis, they've re-signed a lot of their own guys. They didn't really lose anybody, and they get Anthony Richardson back. And now Jacksonville. And look, Jacksonville's done a good job in the offseason. I think they're better. I think they're better now than they were in January. But the Jaguars have turned over about 40% of this roster. I'm not sure if I like that. Why did so many guys depart? Why were so many guys not brought back? I get having some roster turnover. 8, 10, 12 guys. We're talking like 20 guys that are going to be new on the 24 Jaguars that were not here in 23. You figure the 9 or 10 free agents they signed, a majority of them will make the roster. The 9 draft picks they drafted, a majority of them will make the roster. I don't think they're necessarily done in free agency. I mean, if you 53 guys, right, that's what they keep. 18 guys, 20 guys of that 53, you're talking almost 40% of the roster is going to be new. That's a lot, man. That is a lot. So we'll see what happens. We'll talk with a guy that played here in Jacksonville. He played almost a decade in the National Football League. My buddy Clay Harbor, he comes up in a matter of moments. Again, NBA playoffs coming up 7 o'clock. Cleveland and Boston, game one, TD Garden. What will Cleveland have left after that 7-game series with Orlando? Quick turnaround for the Cavs. And then later on tonight, Oklahoma City and Dallas. If you haven't watched Oklahoma City yet, man, they're fun. They're young, but they're fun. They're the number one seed in the West for a reason. Should be a good night of NBA playoff basketball. We'll keep you updated on Cleveland and Boston when they tip at 7 o'clock. With J.J. LaSelva, the Hacker Ryan Green with you, in for Blue this week. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us. It's a Tuesday night edition of Hacker After Dark. Former Jaguar, tight end Clay Harbor, next, 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar offseason, well, a lot of it is in the rearview mirror, right? Free agency, for the most part, has come and gone. The NFL draft has come and gone. We got rookie minicamp next week, and OTAs are now inside of 3 weeks down the road. With that, let's kind of recap the Jaguar offseason with my buddy Clay Harbor. He played tight end for almost a decade in the National Football League, including some of that time right here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Clay, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ryan. Appreciate you having me on, man. Love talking Jaguars. Love my time out there. And I think we're heading in the right direction here.
Clay, always appreciate the time. You and I spoke when the season ended. And look, at that point, it was rough times, right? The Jaguars had lost 5 out of 6 from 8-3 to missing the postseason. But a lot transpired between free agency and the draft. And we'll kind of get your thoughts individually on guys in a moment. But a broad overview, Clay, what's been your thought on the last, you know, 3.5 months of what the Jaguars have accomplished?
I like what they've done, man. They've filled some needs, and they've really gotten some players, obviously, in free agency, in the draft. I think that that can help them. You know, the number one thing pickup I liked was Arik Armstead, right? I know he's a guy that hasn't been able to stay healthy as of late, but he is a weapon, man. He's a guy, you watch him on tape, you watch him on film. Me as a tight end, obviously he can play interior, he does some outside, but he's a guy I don't want to go against, right? He's a big, stout guy. I mean, 33 sacks over the last few years. The guy can just get the job done. And putting him on a D-line with Josh Allen, obviously re-signing Josh Allen, got to say, great move. I know it's a lot of money, but you need to do it. Trayvon Walker coming into his own, I think that was a great pickup. And I also like the Ronald Darby pickup there, right? He's a veteran guy. He's played with several teams. He's not a guy that's going to any shock and awe, but he's a guy that you know what you're getting with him, and he's done it before. He's a veteran, and you're going to be able to get by with him. And then Gabe Davis, obviously, maybe some people think maybe you overpaid, you wanted to bring back Ridley. I like Gabe Davis. I think he's a guy that can catch the football. He's performed in this league. He has 27 career touchdowns. Last year, 45 catches, 750 yards, 7 touchdowns with the Bills. He's a guy that's going to help, right? And a guy that I know pretty well, too, and you're not going to hear much about him, but Trevis Gibson, I think he's a guy that can help on the D-line depth. And Mitch Morse, I think you needed a center. Right, you needed a center, and I don't want to talk bad about our guy, but I think that's a big improvement and a guy that's done it in this league, and I think that's going to help Trevor, having a veteran guy back there, not have to worry about the protections as much. So now he can keep his eyes downfield, he can focus on what coverage he's getting, he can focus on more things, knowing that you're not going to get that pressure right up the gut. Because this is a veteran football player that's played, you have more confidence in him. So I love that move as well.
former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. And Clay, let's talk about the lines of scrimmage first, because Trent Baalke, back in January when he met the media, you know, at that point, everybody was asking about the future of Calvin Ridley and the Josh Allen extension, and those were the big stories. But if you go back and you watch that thing, one of the things Baalke said, we got to get bigger, man. We got to get more physical. We got to get tougher on the line of scrimmage, on both the O-line and the D-line. We were getting pushed around. Well, look at this offseason. You mentioned Mitch Morse. They re-sign Ezra Cleveland. They draft Javon Foster out of Missouri, and that was just on the offensive line. Defensively, Eric Armstead, Trevis Gibson. They draft Mason Smith. They draft Jordan Jefferson. They draft Miles Cole. That's eight guys, 280-plus, that they've added to both lines of scrimmage. You know, Clay, Baalke did exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, he really did. And I even liked that the safety they brought in with Savage. I know we're talking about the players up front, but this guy can play down in the run game as well as defend passes on the back end there. But yeah, I thought he did a great job. Like I said, the Armstead move is one of my most underrated moves of all free agency. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be a difference maker. Right now, I put up this defensive line with the old Saxonville days. I think he got big. You watch these guys coming off the bus, you're like, oh my goodness, who are we playing against this game? And as a guy, you know, you're watching the team and you're saying, hey, you're watching the tape. Who am I going against? What is this going to be, a physical team? Is this going to be a finesse team? This is going to be a physical, big defensive front. You're going into a game, you know your chin strap's got to be buckled. And I think that's what Baalke wants. Obviously, he's a traits guy, but I love the moves he made, especially in the trenches. I think it was a good job for him.
Let's talk about two guys that you mentioned briefly. Number one, Trevis Gibson. You're very familiar in the Chicago area with the Bears. Obviously, you do a lot of work up there. You're a former Bear as well. I mean, Trevis Gibson's a guy, 10 sacks in 21 and 22. He went to Nashville last year with the Titans, didn't do very much. But, Clay, looking at his numbers, he had 7 sacks in 21, and I want to say Bill Shuey, who's now here in Jacksonville, was his position coach in Chicago in 21. I don't know if that means anything, but it's certainly interesting.
No, I love Trevis Gibson. I remember, like you said, I cover the Bears. I'm out there at training camp. I've seen this guy play. He's big. He's athletic. He was a fifth-round pick. He's young. I think he's only 25, 26 years old. He had 7 sacks that year. What happened with him was the Bears were counting on him to really be a big-time pass rusher with no other pass rushers on the defensive line with him, right? So now he's getting double-teamed. He's getting chips. And he's not a guy that's going to be playing through that stuff. He just couldn't do it. But when you put him on a line, the other side, you got Josh Allen, you got Eric Armstead, you got Trayvon Walker. He's a guy that you can put inside in pass rush situations. You can put outside. So for me, in this scenario, with this team, he's going to get one-on-ones. That's why he was able to have 7 sacks and not that many reps back in 2021. So I love the addition. I think this is a guy that you can see under the radar, can play, and in the right situation, when he's not getting double-teamed, he's a problem.
Couple of more for former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. You also mentioned, Clay, Darnell Savage with your coverage of the NFC North up there. Interestingly, that he was primarily a safety in Green Bay. There was some talk about maybe moving him to nickel here in Jacksonville, although I don't know about that now because they drafted Jarian Jones out of Florida State in round 3. Regardless, Savage is going to be somewhere in the Jaguar secondary, and based on what you said, you seem to like that addition.
No, I love Savage. He's a guy that can play in all aspects of the game, and he's a guy that's going to get down there in the box and stop the run. And that's a big thing for the Jaguars this year, is you want to stop the run. And once they do that, you know, you're going to get tested a little bit more on the outside. I know there's still concerns about the cornerbacks and the defensive backfield. Well, like I said, they've got some veteran guys back there. And I like this team. You got some young guys, but you also got some veteran guys. And for me, when I'm looking at a team, one of the best places I think you can have veteran guys like Savage is in the defensive backfield, because the communication is so key back there. And that's something that they're going to have. You know, Ronald Darby's a guy who's communicated before. Savage is a guy who's communicated before. They're going to be on the same page. They know what it takes to be successful. They know what it takes to play. And I think that's going to help the Jaguars a lot come the season.
Corey, let's go to your side of the ball, the offensive side of the ball. You know, I have a picture in my phone that I took in August last year of Calvin Ridley, Zay Jones, and Christian Kirk. And I remember thinking at the time, it was during training camp, wow, this could be something for the next couple of years. Here we are, eight and a half months later, Ridley's gone, Zay Jones is gone, Kirk is all that remains, but you add Gabe Davis, you had a first-round pick in Brian Thomas, you combine those guys with Evan Ingram, you sign Devin Duvernay from Baltimore, obviously Travis Etienne still. What do you make of the skill position surrounding Trevor Lawrence?
I like it. I think they can add maybe a little bit of depth, but we'll start with Duvernay. Obviously, this guy was a third-round pick back in 2020. He's a big-time returner, and that's where he really makes his, you know, makes his money. But the guy has caught, you know, 100 passes, probably 1,000 yards, and a few touchdowns. So he's a guy that can do a lot of different things, but it's going to help you a lot with these new return rules, punt return, kick return game. And then Brian Thomas, I think you got great value there. You're able to trade back, and you're still able to get one of the better receivers in the draft. And this guy led the FBS in receiving touchdowns last year, and he was on a team with Malik Nabers. Okay, this guy can get the job done. I mean, very impressive. 17 touchdowns in 13 games, over 1,000 yards, 6'2", 6'3". He can run. He can catch. I love this pick. You're able to even get some more picks from him. So to me, excellent job. I think that's going to loosen up some coverage there. So Travis Etienne can run the ball more, and he pairs well with Gabe Davis. Andy pairs well with Christian Kirk, guys that can go inside and outside. I wouldn't mind seeing him maybe add another outside receiver before, you know, free agency ends. And you'll see another run on guys before the season starts, post-draft. You start bringing guys in for camps and whatnot. So I like where they're at, especially when you add Evan Ingram into that, because he's a guy that obviously we know how versatile he is, one of the best years for a tight end, the best year for a tight end in Jaguars history last year. I think he's one of the top versatile tight ends in the league. So to me, I like the weapons. It's not spectacular, but it's enough to get the job done. He's got guys like Kirk that he can trust.
Final moments of former Jacksonville Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. Clay, Trevor Lawrence, coming into year number four. We all expect a contract extension for Trevor sooner rather than later. A lot of questions about him, though, nationally, it seems. Maybe some of the luster is off from what people thought about him 12 months ago. You being a former player, you covering the league nationally, you being a former Jaguar at that, what is your opinion of Trevor entering 2024?
I'm still high on Trevor, and I know you look at the numbers. He goes from 25 touchdowns to 21, from 8 picks to 14. But if you watch the games like we did, I mean, you know there's a lot of pressure up there, and he had a ton of drops this year. I don't got the numbers in front of me, but if you tell me, like, which quarterback had one of the worst drop catch rates for him, it was Trevor Lawrence. These aren't just drops that don't matter. These are touchdowns. These are big plays and plays that can really change the game. So if you can change one or two of those things, I think his season changes. And then, I mean, the biggest thing, you look at it. When he was healthy, he was playing well. When he wasn't healthy, he wasn't. So if you can keep this guy clean, you got more. So you keep the center position, you improve that. You keep him clean. You don't have pressure in your face up the middle, which is the worst type of pressure you can get for a quarterback. He's going to improve based off of being able to keep him protected and keep him clean. So I'm still high on Trevor. I think he's going to come back and have a bounce back year this year. And I think the Jaguars, people are counting him out. Obviously, you got the Texans and the Colts are looking good. But I still think the Jaguars are right up there with the Texans to compete for this division.
Clay, as we begin to wrap up, the last time you and I talked was right after the season. Fast forward to where we are now. After free agency, after the draft, are they better? Is this a better roster now than it was when they walked off the field in Nashville on January 7th?
I think so. I think they've improved. And I know people will say, you know, you lost Zay, you lost Calvin Ridley. But I'm a big Calvin Ridley and Zay Jones guy, but I mean, they didn't have the best year, either of them. And Calvin had a lot of drops, a lot of big drops too, and he couldn't get on the same page with Trevor. So I think that loss isn't going to weigh as heavy as some people might think, and he just wasn't worth that money. And I think defensively, they're a better defense. I know a cornerback's going to look a lot different. you lost a couple of your big guys there, but I really like this defense. I think they improved. Eric Armstead on that defensive line. You locked up Josh Allen. You got Trevon Walker getting a year older. The guy's still young. He's going to improve. So for me, this is a better team. You got better generals out there, especially on defense with Nielsen. I think Doug is going to get the offense where it needs to be, and I think this team will improve this year.
Former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. Clay, final question. You alluded to it. The AFC South, rewind the clock back 12 months. Coming into 23, it might have been the most boring division in football, maybe the worst division in football. It was certainly in the argument. And now here we are in May of 24. I'm not sure if there's a more compelling division in football, quite frankly, with the Texans, the Jags, Anthony Richardson coming back with Indianapolis, and Tennessee spent like $1 billion in free agency. What's your thought on the division as we head into the year?
I think it's a tough division, and nobody can deny that. I think, you know, the Colts are flying under the radar, but I think their team, if Anthony Richardson stays healthy, I love the pick of Latu. I love them getting AD Mitchell at 52. I thought that was a steal. I think with Pittman and Mitchell and obviously everything they got over there, they're going to be a tough out. Latu can play. I think that the Texans, obviously you got Diggs, right? He's coming. You got Tank Dell. You got – it's just a tough team with a lot of players. So the Texans, if you look at it, yeah, they're the favorites. But to me, the Jaguars improved too. So I think this team went from being – this division went from being one of the worst divisions in football to a top-tier division. I think you got quarterbacks that are going to show that they're the top tier of quarterbacks. I think Richardson's good. I think, obviously, Lawrence can play. And then – obviously, everybody knows what C.J. Stroud was able to do. So when it comes down to it, tough division. It's going to be competitive. But I still think, and I'm not just saying this because I was a former Jag and I love my Jags, I still think that they can pull this thing out and make the playoffs this year. And I'm still confident they'll do that.
Jaguar fans will love to hear that. Clay Harbor spent some time here in Jacksonville, a very long, successful NFL career as well. Clay, hard to believe this, man, but the next time you and I talk, we'll be previewing training camp as this offseason is absolutely flying on by. Thank you as always, pal. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. In for Blue all week, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. So I had Mike DiRocco, our buddy D-Rock, ESPN.com, on the program last night, this afternoon. D-Rock on ESPN.com releases a story. Have the Jacksonville Jaguars improved at key positions this offseason? Well, let's talk about it. Pass rush depth is D-Rock's first in key positions for the Jaguars. I'm not going to quote his entire story. We're going to talk about it. All right, pass rush depth. No, I don't think they've gotten better. I think they got two really good players. Josh Allen, one of the best pass rushers in the league. Trevon Walker, a guy that really came on towards the end of last year. I am totally fine with Josh Allen and Trevon Walker. My concern is very similar to what my concern was 12 months ago when we did this for an entire offseason. What do they have behind Josh Allen and Trevon Walker as far as affecting the quarterback? Now, last year, every time that was brought up to Doug Peterson or Trent Baalke or whomever, we were told, well, we feel good about the young guys. We think the young guys are going to develop. All right, well, that did not happen, right? They were wrong about that. That's a strike and a miss. Young guys didn't develop. They had nothing behind Trevon Walker and Josh Allen. Are they going to make the same mistake for the second straight year? Well, Travis Gibson was brought in. I guess he's the new Kalyvon Chaisson, although he's better than Kalyvon Chaisson, so that in and of itself is an upgrade. He had 7 sacks in 2021. And I want to say he was on that Chicago Bears team with Robert Quinn in 2021. And when Quinn took a lot of double teams, Travis Gibson was able to have one-on-ones and did pretty well. Well, obviously, Josh Allen and Trevon Walker are going to take a lot of attention. So maybe Travis Gibson, this will be a great opportunity for him. So I'll grant you Travis Gibson is better than Kalebon Chaisson. I think JJ or myself might have been better than Kalebon Chaisson. So that's not really saying a whole lot. Do they have anything after those three? Not really. Yasir Abdullah, Tyler Lacy, Miles Cole, the seventh round pick. Look, rookie minicamp, I'm excited to see Miles Cole. I mentioned that last night. But he's a developmental guy, right? He's a project. They need to sign a veteran. Bud Dupree, Carl Lawson, someone along those lines. Am I expecting world beaters to come in here that are veteran free agents in the month of May? No. But they can be a rotation piece. They can give you something. Because right now I am concerned about the veteran edge pass rush depth on this team. The secondary. They added a lot of guys in the secondary. They also released a lot of guys. Rayshon Jenkins gone. Darius Williams gone. Trey Herndon gone. The arrivals of Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage, Jarian Jones, DeAndre Prince. You know you got Tyson Campbell. You know you got Andre Sisco. You know you got Antonio Johnson. I'm going to use a frangiism here. I'm intrigued by the secondary. But I don't know what to make of it. Do they need another veteran corner? Or are we okay going into the year with Tyson Campbell and Ronald Darby as your two starting corners with either Darnell Savage, Antonio Johnson, or Jarian Jones as the nickel? A lot of newness in the secondary. I don't mind it. I'm just curious to see how it's all going to work out. Offensive line, they are better. Mitch Morse is better than Luke Fortner. Ezra Cleveland, an entire offseason here. Cam Robinson's not suspended to start the year. Brandon Sheriff is healthy right now. And Anton Harrison, you would think, would be better in year two than he was his rookie year. I'm okay on the offensive line. And Walker Little, Luke Fortner, Javon Foster, the rookie, Blake Hance, Tyler Shatley, they got a little bit of depth on the offensive line. I think the O-line's okay. It certainly needs to be better than it was last year. I think it will be. Will it be considerably better? I hope. I'm not sure of that necessarily, but I do think it will be better. We'll just have to see at what level it's better. As I've said repeatedly, I think the Jaguars are better now than they were when the season ended in Nashville. Having said that, I have concerns about the depth on the edge for pass rush. I have interest as to how the secondary is going to shake out. I'm okay at wide receiver. I think Gabe Davis, Brian Thomas, Christian Kirk, Devin Duvernay, Parker Washington, I'm all right there. I'm all right at running back, quarterback, obviously, tight end. Interior defensive line, I think they're okay. Linebacker, I think they're okay. My two big concerns, edge pass rush and secondary. And we'll see how it shakes out as OTAs and minicamp commence here in the next month, month and a half. We've done a lot on the NFL tonight. We will continue doing a lot on the NFL, certainly. That is obviously the big topic. But the NBA playoffs, man, really heating up. JJ, you're as big an NBA fan as I am, maybe bigger. I'm really excited about these series starting tonight. You got Cleveland and Boston, 7 o'clock. You got Oklahoma City and Dallas at 9:30. Of course, the Knicks and the Pacers. Minnesota has just destroyed Denver in two games. What about the last eight in the NBA playoffs? We'll also put a bow on the Orlando Magic season. My buddy Sean Devaney, he's covered the NBA for years. He's now with Heavy.com. He joins us next. We'll talk a little association with you on a Tuesday night in Jacksonville, Florida. It's Hacker After Dark.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. And then there were eight teams remaining in the NBA playoffs. The conference semifinals underway. Unfortunately, the Orlando Magic bowed out on Sunday afternoon, losing to Cleveland in seven games. Let's look ahead at the playoff picture, and let's take a look at the offseason to be down in Central Florida with my buddy Sean Devaney. He does a great job covering the NBA, has so for years with Heavy.com, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ryan. How are you?
Sean, I'm okay. I needed about an hour or so on Sunday to just grieve a little bit after Cleveland knocked out Orlando. Unfortunate ending to the year, but boy, a lot of positives for the Magic, and that Game 7 performance from Paolo Banchero was truly something to watch.
Yeah, it really was. You know, it's unfortunate. I think I'm curious about Franz Wagner and kind of where he goes from here. Obviously, there's some other stuff to deal with in terms of building out the roster. But the way that Banchero played, you know, that just has to give you a lot of confidence about the future and where this thing's going. And, you know, we've talked about the Magic over the years. And I think one of the frustrations of being a fan of that team has been, okay, what's the direction? Where are we going? You know, you kind of swinging from semi-star to semi-star, you know, whether it's a guy like Victor Oladipo or whoever it is, you know, just not somebody who's able to really carry that team, carry that franchise. And now you finally have the guy, and you can start with him, and everything will fall in around him. And that's just been something that they've lacked the better part of, you know, a decade, 12 years or so, basically since Dwight Howard departed. So it's good to be in a situation where you know who your man is, and your man is Paolo Banchero right now.
Sean, you've covered the league for a while. We always talk about the playoff experience or lack thereof in Orlando's case. Well, now those youngsters had seven games. They were in a game seven on the road. They won an elimination game in game six. I would have to think the experience they gained here will certainly do them well moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whether it's Banchero or you know, even Wagner, as poorly as he played at times, you know, throughout the series and in game seven, you know, that's not a bad thing when you're talking about going forward. It's obviously a bad thing in game seven, but it's not a bad thing going forward and how you learn what you take from it. Jalen Suggs, you know, when you look at the guys who are likely to be around for the next 5 years, this is a pretty good building block. You know, to be as close as they were, you know, even going on the road, obviously they didn't win any of the road games, but they played Cleveland pretty tough, you know, and to cough up an 18-point lead is, again, it's a difficult thing to do in that scenario, but in the long term, when you're talking about what you learn from it, you know, there's probably some benefit there for these young guys as well.
Sean Devaney, Heavy.com. Sean, the postseason exposes teams, it shows the warts. Certainly the wart for Orlando is shooting, or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't do anything. Now, they have a ton of money. Now, they got a couple of in-house free agents they got to figure out. Gary Harris, Markelle Fultz among them. But Malik Monk, Buddy Hield, are they a little more ambitious for a Paul George scenario? I'm not as high on the Klay Thompson idea as some are. What's your thought about Orlando's direction with the amount of money they have in free agency?
Yeah, you know, Klay Thompson is kind of a funny thing because you know, it's come up a lot and it's been discussed a lot. But from, you know, just talking to people around the league, it doesn't sound to me like the notion of Klay Thompson going to Orlando is coming from Orlando. I think it's more coming from speculation outside, maybe from his agents, because, you know, that's a team that has money. They want to put some pressure on the Warriors to get something done. So, yeah, you know, Klay Thompson to Orlando, that way the Warriors, you know, feel like they're not bidding against themselves. And, you know, frankly, the Magic have been used that way frequently in the last couple of years. But I'm not sure that that's really, you know, to go to a guy with the injury history that he's had, with the difficulties that he's had in long stretches during the last couple of seasons. You know, I don't think that's necessarily the best fit for them. I do think they'll go for somebody if they could get somebody a little bit younger, a little bit more of a two-way player. You know, you're probably not going to get a great defender at that spot, but if you can get a Malik Monk or Gary Trent Jr., who's somebody they've had interest in before, you know, even a Luke Kennard, you know, you need somebody who can stretch the floor and make some shots. I don't think it'll be Klay Thompson.
Malik Monk is the guy, right? Gary Trent's intriguing as well, and there's some thought that if they do enough with contracts, they might be able to bring two guys in. But if they were to bring one, isn't Malik Monk the guy from Sacramento?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think he's got the right approach, the right attitude. You know, with Buddy Hield, you know, there's been a lot to deal with him, off the floor. I think maybe he's been humbled a little bit by the way the last couple of seasons have unfolded, but you'd be banking on that. And I don't know that you want to bank on that. You know, the chemistry and what they've built there, the way those players fit together on and off the floor, that's something they've given a lot of consideration to. And, you know, a guy like Buddy Hield can be disruptive. I mean, that's just, you know, whether he still deserves that reputation or not, that almost doesn't matter. He's got that reputation, and he earned it early on in his career. And, you know, I'm not sure that the Magic, and, you know, you listen to Jeff Weltman talk about building this team, I think he's very conscious of that. And that's, you know, going back to Klay Thompson, that's another reason why you'd be careful with Klay Thompson. But I think Malik Monk, you know, his willingness to be a sixth man and the way he's embraced that role when it's been there for him, you know, his ability to really understand that as a shooter, you just keep shooting and you know, eventually your numbers are going to shake out. You know, he would be, to me, the ideal candidate. I agree with you.
Couple of more for Sean Devaney, heavy.com. Sean, before we get into the playoffs, final Orlando Magic thought, the Paul George rumors. Now, I don't know what it would take. I guess he's going to become a free agent. I don't know if it's a sign and trade deal. That would be ambitious for Orlando. You know, you mentioned Jeff Weltman wants to build it slow. He said that Paul George would be a different approach, but if they think they're ready to win now, could that be a scenario they go down this offseason?
You know, I think that's another case of the rumor being from outside of Orlando and not emanating from anything that they're actually planning to do. I mean, he's 34 years old. He's going to want, $50 million a year. And you know, I don't think the Magic are looking at that as a real possibility. You know, again, you know, he needs some leverage. He needs some leverage in getting an extension from the Clippers, and you know that's going to be one. The Magic are going to be used in that scenario a lot because they've got cap space, and there's not many teams that have cap space. So yeah, that's I would not hold my breath waiting for Paul George to wind up in Orlando. I guess there's the possibility if he were to opt in and be willing to be traded the way James Harden did. You know, there's that possibility, but I think is a long shot.
I like that. I do not like the Klay Thompson, Paul George rumors. I'm much more happier with a Malik Monk situation. All right, Sean, let's talk about the eight teams that are left. Let's go series by series, rapid fire. Minnesota is destroying the defending world champions. Not only are they beating them on the court, they're beating them at the mental game. We saw some just crazy things from the Denver Nuggets last night. What do you make of Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves just going nuts right now in the postseason?
Yeah, you know, Jamal Murray's sort of at the center of the thing with the weird throwing the thing, throwing the pack on the floor. And more than that, you know, Anthony Edwards really attacking him attacking him defensively, which is not Jamal Murray's strength. You know, when they've been able to get that switch, then Anthony Edwards has really taken him to the woodshed, frankly. And I think that's carried over to the other end. You see Jamal Murray 3 for 18. 8 points, four turnovers as well. Just really a terrible performance. You know, it's more surprising, I think, to see Jokic handled the way that he was, especially without Gobert in game two. You know, with game one, you could kind of say, well, they had Gobert playing sort of a free safety, and they had Karl Anthony Towns and Naz Reid on Jokic. And, you know, there were reasons why you could say Jokic was slowed. But, you know, it just didn't seem – it seemed like there was much more opportunity for him to be aggressive in game two, and he just didn't do it. So, yeah, really, this is it's shocking. You know, I think everybody assumed that the Nuggets, even after game one, would bounce back. So to see them come out and put up 80 points, that's pretty shocking.
Sean, the other Western semi begins tonight, Oklahoma City and Dallas. The youngsters in OKC weren't affected in round one. Now they get Luka and Kyrie in round two. What do you make of the Mavericks and the Thunder?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Oklahoma City has to be the favorite here. You know, even with the lack of experience, you know, I think you've got to consider them the favorite here. I think you've got obviously their star player Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is probably every bit as good as Luka Doncic, the Mavs star. The Mavs have the better number two in Kyrie Irving, but then you go down the rest of the roster and it's advantage Thunder all the way. And so I think the depth of the Thunder, I'm not that scared of their youth when you look at what their depth looks like. I think Oklahoma City is and should be the favorite here.
Final moments with Sean Devaney talking NBA from Hebby.com. In the East, Cleveland battered and bruised, but they got through Orlando in seven, and they're playing basically right now. The game just tipped off against Boston. Does Boston have any issues here? I mean, Cleveland is certainly a banged-up basketball team coming into this series.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes that's not a bad thing, you know, not necessarily just being banged up, but to kind of having to grind your way to the kind of win that they did in game seven with the comeback and all that stuff. And you don't have time to really think about the fact that you're such huge underdogs. You know, maybe you can go in and play above your stations a little bit in game one. But, you know, in general, that's going to be tough. You know, Cleveland obviously looked terrible on the road in the playoffs against Orlando. They did last year, too, against the Knicks on the road. They did not look good. So, you know, it's going to be tough for them to go into Boston and get a couple wins. Boston will be playing without Kristaps Porzingis, but I think even without him, I think you'd have the Celtics as pretty heavy favorites.
And then finally, Indiana and New York. We saw the Knicks squeak by game one last night. Boy, Jalen Brunson is on another planet right now. I mean, that guy has been nothing short of sensational this postseason. Your thoughts on Brunson and your thoughts on the Knicks-Pacers as we move into game two tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Brunson because, you know, you got to go back to the first two games of the playoffs. He was 8 for 26 and 8 for 29. So he was 16 for 55 to start this postseason. And, you know, there was a lot of questions about what's wrong with Jalen Brunson. He has, safe to say, he's turned that around here, where he's averaging 42 points over the last, I think it's five games. The last five games, he's averaging 42 points and shooting 50% from the field. You know, for a guy who, was a second round pick, was sort of an afterthought in Dallas. They let him go. They didn't think he could pair well with Luka. And the Knicks brought him in to be a star, and he has done that, no question. You got to be really, really impressed with the way this guy has played. I think they've done a really good job of putting the pieces around him that they need, with Anunoby, with Dante DiVincenzo, and Josh Hart, his teammates from Villanova, of course. But yeah, you've got to look at him and just his relentless scoring ability. That's been too much to overcome.
Sean, final question. We won't hold you to it. We'll have you back on right around the time the finals start. But right now, based on everything you've seen, Minnesota, Boston, I mean, are those the favorites the way you see it right now?
You'd have to say, you know, I mean, Anthony Edwards has announced himself. There's no question about it. I mean, to think we could have a Western Conference Finals of Minnesota and Oklahoma City, going up against you know, one of those teams going up against the mighty Celtics. What a story! What a finals! That you know, whichever way it pans out. But if you don't have the Nuggets in there, and you have Dallas, like I say, probably going to lose to Oklahoma City in this thing. That's a crazy Western Conference Finals and could set up a really fascinating NBA Finals.
Sean Devaney does a great job covering the NBA. Sean, tell the good folks here in Jacksonville, man, about Heavy.com and the coverage you guys provide over there.
Yeah, come to Heavy Sports. We've got you know, a lot of the NBA playoffs, obviously, in full swing. We've got a full complement of writers working on it. So, yeah, lots of good stuff going on there.
Sean, I know you're busy, man. Thank you, as always, for the time. We'll talk again soon, pal.
Thank you, Ryan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
In for Blue this week, 6 to 8, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Some breaking news in the NBA. If you saw last night, Minnesota destroyed Denver to take a 2-0 lead. But in that game, Jamal Murray, a terrific player for the Denver Nuggets, threw a heating pad onto the floor. I don't think his intention was to throw it onto the floor. I think his intention was to hit the referee with it. Now, it would not have done a lot of damage. It was a heating pad, but that thing went onto the floor. It's slippery. It's wet. You could have had a guy, I mean, they're playing the game when the thing went out there, roll an ankle, heaven forbid, do something to the knee, you know, what have you. Luckily, no injuries happen. The NBA has just come out in the last couple of minutes. No suspension for Jamal Murray. That was a thought that there was going to be a suspension. Apparently, that's not going to happen, but a very substantial fine is coming Jamal Murray's way. So we'll see, but apparently Denver will at least have Murray for Game 3, which now has to wait till Friday night because Dallas and Oklahoma City have to catch up. Denver and Minnesota are already two games in. Dallas, OKC haven't even played Game 1 yet. So that series will catch up. Game 3 between the Nuggets and the Timberwolves is Friday night, but Jamal Murray will be there. He will not be suspended. More on the NBA as the week unfolds here on Hacker After Dark. Coming up next, end of the world of college football. Preseason magazines just a few days away, about a week or so away from beginning to hit newsstands. We'll talk Florida. Are the expectations in Gainesville rising from where they were, say, 2 or 3 months ago to where they are now? Why all of a sudden do people think Florida might be a little better than they thought they were going to be 2 or 3 months ago? My buddy Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. We'll talk Florida, Florida State, Miami, Georgia, the transfer portal, and more. That's next. Tuesday night, Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. A lot going on in the world of college football in the month of May. We're just a couple of weeks away from preseason magazines hitting the newsstands. We got the transfer portal that's essentially closed with some caveats. And a lot going on at the University of Florida in regards to expectations maybe too low coming into the year. We haven't heard that a lot this offseason. With all that being said, I'm welcoming my friend Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News, and you get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Mr. Beard, how are you, my friend?
Well, we are in the month of May, and that is amazing. We're about 3 weeks away from magazines, a lot of different polls coming up. The portal is closed, so there is quite a bit of excitement. Look, I know this is a football segment, but I will just throw this in here as an aside. It really is amazing, particularly in places like Florida and Alabama, the excitement for basketball and the portal for basketball. So that to say, I think that's a real help for the the football program is and the programs overall for these schools.
No, I agree. And let's dive into Florida. There's a lot of things I want to hit with you. Brent, last week I had Cole Kublik on. You obviously know Cole very well. Does a lot of great work in the state of Alabama, Jocks Radio in Birmingham, SEC Network. I mean, the guy is everywhere. And he also does a Cube Show podcast, and he's reviewing all the spring storylines for all the SEC teams. And the reason I had him on is when he talked about Florida last week, he thinks the expectations for the Gators, some are putting their over-under win total at 5.5. He thinks they're way too low. Now, when I had him on, he didn't proclaim they're going to win the national championship by any stretch of the imagination, but he thinks the 4, 5, 6 win talk is nonsense. He thinks they're more in the 7, 8, maybe even 9 win range is not out of the realm of possibility. And you're starting to hear that a little more. Kublik was the first, and I've started to hear that more as the days have gone on here. What is your thought on the Gators, Brent, and some of the talk about maybe there are too low of expectations heading into the year?
Well, that would probably help them, frankly, if that is the case. But you certainly hear that around. But here's the reality. When people start looking at the schedule, and we won't break it down all together, but realistically, they have got, particularly if they win their first few games, the Miami game's crucial, that A&M game is the same, but I've said this for weeks now, they have a real opportunity to start 5-0 or 4-1. And if you start 4-1, it doesn't take much to get to 6. So, you start 5-0, I mean, when you realistically look at the schedule, I mean, they're as good or better than Kentucky. They could beat LSU. Now, what we're finding with LSU is they're really struggling on defense. The beat writers at LSU have told us lately that they would be fine offensively with Garrett Nussmeier in the offense, but defensively, even though they've got better coaches now, they are not ready with their personnel. So that is a winnable game. Also, so that, and without taking time to go through the whole thing, I invite people to do that and make their own estimate of it. But, I mean, heck, it really is not out of the realm for them to win certainly 6 or 7 games. And, look, if you can win 6 or 7 games, can you pull an upset somewhere in October, November?
Yeah, look, that's the hope. And the Kublik's point, and I agree with him, it's a great logo schedule, right? You look at the logos on the schedule and you think, holy cow. But then when you look at the teams, all right, Miami and Florida, that's 6 in one hand, half a dozen in the other. The game's in Gainesville. A&M fired Jimbo Fisher last year. So obviously they're with a new head coach and you get them very early in the season. Tennessee's got a new quarterback. Kentucky has a new quarterback. Florida State's replacing a ton off of their roster last year. Look, Georgia's going to be hard. Texas is going to be hard. It's not all, you know, sunshine and rainbows. But I do think as we get closer to the season, again, the logos on that schedule are phenomenal. The teams themselves, maybe not as daunting as one might think.
Yeah, I would agree. And I still say Florida has in Graham Mertz and DJ Lagway one of the better 1-2 punches in the league at quarterback with Montrell Johnson and those in that running back room. I think they will be fine. Have they brought enough in with the offensive line to make considerable progress? I think that's possible. What's going to determine the season for this team is going to be how much they're improved defensively. Particularly after missing 116 tackles last year, that's got to be better and it's got to be cleaner. And look, I will throw this in there quickly, is they've got to be better on special teams, because when you're in some of these evenly matched games, like you mentioned a few minutes ago, heck, special teams, and it's trite to say this, and it's easy to say it, but you can lose a game or two with special teams, and Gator fans understand that.
You get Brent Beard on First Coast News. You also hear him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Final thought on the Gators. Graham Mertz, I saw a story, I want to say it was maybe College Football Talk or one of those websites. It talked about some of the more underrated, undervalued quarterbacks coming into 2024. Graham Mertz was on that list. If you didn't know anything about Graham Mertz and you just saw his stat line last year, yards, touchdowns, etc., he had a pretty good year, right? Yet when you talk about the better quarterbacks in the SEC, for whatever reason, Graham Mertz's name does not come up. Is he undervalued, in your opinion?
Yes, yes. Heavily undervalued. I really think Graham Mertz, frankly, is – he's certainly in the top five and may even be in the top three as far as quarterbacks were concerned. I mean, look, their record was not what it was last year because of Mertz. Mertz really played well. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's a real leader. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. So Mertz, I can tell you this, there are a lot of teams in the SEC who love to have Graham Mertz as their quarterback.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I agree with you. Certainly in the top five to me among SEC quarterbacks entering 2024. All right, the transfer portal. Final wraps are being put on the portal. I think it's essentially shut down. The verbiage, though, if you filed your paperwork beforehand, that's why you still see some visits. I know Florida has a couple of visits coming up. But by and large, a lot of the hay is in the barn. When it comes to Florida, Florida State, Miami, even Georgia, Brent, anything stand out to you about both portal sessions in December and here in the spring slash summer as we enter the 2024 season?
I'll have an addendum here to Florida. Hollis Davidson, who's a tight end, decommitted from Auburn. He scheduled a trip to Florida. I think the big target is Elijah Badger, who is a wide receiver and the number one available transfer wide receiver, Arizona State. We know Florida's history with Florida State right now, with Arizona State right now. So I think they have helped themselves, frankly, with what you've got in the portal. Really, the team that's done as much as anybody in the portal for the state is Miami, and how they have really come through. The latest example is Michigan State defensive tackle Simeon Barrow. And he was looking at Florida State, Missouri, and LSU and Texas. So that's a nice pickup for Miami. He is the fourth defensive tackle transfer. They got NC State nose tackle C.J. Clark. They've got Marley Cook from Middle Tennessee State and Marshall edge rusher Elijah Austin. And again, for our listeners, don't snicker when we mention Tennessee State and Marshall and NC State. Look, people, I think, are beginning to understand just because it's a smaller school doesn't mean these guys can't really play because they can. So I would say, and certainly this is not saying that that Georgia and Florida State didn't help themselves. They just had less to do. Is that a fair statement, Hack? I mean, I know that. I mean, we know Georgia just reloads, and Florida State is basically on the verge of that now, credit to Mike Norvell. But I think of all the state schools, and we really need him to touch the surface. I mean, Cam Ward is the best of them all at quarterback, or possibly could be. So I would say the team that helped themselves more than anybody would be Miami.
Yeah, and you look at the portal both last year and this year, the four big schools in the state, and UCF, I'm giving them credit, they are a, yep, a Big 12 program. Yep. You got transfer at UCF, the quarterback from Arkansas, transfer, yes, at Miami, the quarterback from Washington State, transfer at Florida State, the quarterback from Oregon State, and transfer at Florida, the quarterback from Wisconsin. Every team in the state, the Big Four, all of their quarterbacks transferring in from other Power 5 programs.
Yeah, that is amazing. It really is. And one thing I'll add real quick, Florida State, Mike Norvell said the other day that 65 to 70% of their roster is from high school recruiting and building that way. They kind of cherry-pick some other guys when if you stop the average guy on the street right now who is a football fan, would he have said or she have said that it would have been just the opposite, that Florida State would have brought in all these transfers and had very few high school recruiting? So it's interesting when you really look at actually what happened.
Yeah, no question about it. Again, final moments with Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. All right, Brent, a loss in the college community, the college football community, the athletic director community, a guy that you knew very well from his time out there in the state of Alabama, a former AD in both the SEC and the ACC. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Hootie Ingram died on Monday at 90 years old, had a wonderful life. He was a star football player in Alabama, and he got into the coaching ranks. He was an assistant coach at Georgia under Vince Dooley, also at Arkansas. He was, and this is easily forgettable, but he was a head coach at Clemson from 70 to 72, but he was best known for his time of being the athletic director at Florida State in Alabama. The thing that he did at Florida State that I think was so significant is he basically helped with the president and also with Bobby Bowden. They had to make a decision on their future, and they had the opportunity of either going to the SEC or the ACC. And they ended up in the ACC, and Bobby Bowden said later, we thought we would have a better opportunity to win championships in the ACC. In the immediate, that actually happened. And they thought they would actually become a power in basketball. And they've had some good teams under Leonard Hamilton, but they have not been as good as of late. What I would say to that is, if they, and I can tell you this from their fans, you hear this too, that if they had to do that over again, that they would have gotten into the SEC, and that would have done so much more for their future. And how ironic is it, Hack, that we are celebrating the life of Hootie Ingram, who had a real say-so in where they would go in conferences. And now we've got Florida State doing everything within its power and its fan base to get out of the ACC. I'm sure you see the irony in that.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's been, 33 years since Florida State joined the Atlantic Coast Conference, and now they are frantically, I guess, trying to get out is a good way to put it. Brent, we got 90 seconds. Leave us with this. Florida fans and Florida State fans, your head coaches are coming to Jacksonville next week. Billy Napier on Monday, right? And Mike Norvell on Wednesday?
Yeah, that's an interesting opportunity for fans of both the schools. I would invite them to go on the websites for the booster clubs and find out more information. But just wanted to mention that they're both on their tour as they do. So that is coming up next week. We'll certainly be looking forward to hopefully being there and talking about that. And just a reminder, the countdown is on for Preseason Magazine, young man, and we're excited about that. And I will end on this. First of all, happy Mother's Day coming up to all the mothers. And happy birthday to the young man in your household. Before we turn around, he's going to be graduating from college after having a successful football or basketball or baseball career, and I'll also end with this too, Hank, and my mother went through this, and you can appreciate this, when mothers have grandchildren, as mine did, it frankly changes their life in many ways, does it not?
I've seen it firsthand. There's no question about it. Yeah, little Hack turns 5 years old today, graduates VPK next week, and we got kindergarten beginning in September. That is absolutely hard to believe. Brent
really
Beard,
is.
You see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Brent, you're the man. Thank you as always. We'll do it again next week, pal.
Look forward to it, bud. Take care.
And thank you to my buddy Brent Beard. Again, you see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. As it is interesting, right? The thought all along coming into the offseason, you look at that schedule for Florida, you look at all the daunting tasks on that schedule. Oh, man, over-under win total, 5.5. And while I still don't think Florida is going to challenge for the SEC or the 12-team playoff or anything like that, I'm not getting outrageous here. The more people you talk to, the deeper we get into the offseason, are starting to think, all right, maybe it's more of a logo schedule, right? The logos on that schedule are unbelievably good. But can Florida beat Miami? I'm not saying will they. I'm saying can they? Well, of course. Can they beat A&M? Yeah, why not? A&M fired Jimbo last year, and they get the new coaching staff early on in September. Can Florida win in Starkville? Of course they can. Kentucky's got a brand-new quarterback. Tennessee has a brand-new quarterback. I'm not saying Florida's going to win these games, but they absolutely have an opportunity to. Now, you get to the cocktail party here in Jacksonville, I don't think Florida's going to win that. You go to Austin to play the Longhorns, I don't think Florida's going to win that. I'm not going to get, you know, off the rocker here, but I do think 7-5, maybe 8-4, that might start be getting a little ambitious, but 7-5 is certainly plausible for the Gators. I don't buy this 3-9, 4-8 stuff. Very well could happen, right? I'm not saying it can't happen, but I think that if you were to tell me Florida would finish 7-5, I wouldn't be shocked by that. I would start being surprised anything north of 7-5, but I think 7-5 is plausible. And by the way, Gator fans, you might not like to hear this, but if they do finish 7-5, that's a great coaching job for Billy Napier. I mean, that's a terrific job if they win seven games on that schedule that they do have in 2024. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very, very busy Tuesday night edition of Hacker After Dark. We certainly appreciate you guys hanging out with us here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. We have a ton of people to thank. Again, my buddy Brent Beard, you see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. Thank you to Sean Devaney, Heavy.com, one of our main NBA guys here on Hacker After Dark, as we recap the Orlando Magic season, give them an outlook for the offseason. They're going to be active. They got a lot of money to spend to try to get some talent surrounding Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, and the crew down there. And then the NBA Conference semifinals. Look, Minnesota has absolutely dominated the defending world champion Denver Nuggets. They're up 2-0 with two wins in Denver. Now Denver has to win 4 out of 5, including they're going to have to beat Minnesota, what, twice on Minnesota's home floor. That is going to be a very daunting task. We saw the Knicks survive game one against the Pacers last night at Madison Square Garden. Boy, how unbelievable has Jalen Brunson been. And the other conference semifinals, right, going on right now, game one, Cleveland and Boston. I don't think Cleveland has much left. I think that Orlando series took a lot out of them. I would be surprised if they give Boston a real test here. And then the one that starts later on tonight, Oklahoma City and Dallas, who really knows, right? The Thunder are very young, but they got a great player in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Is this Luka Doncic's time to get to a conference final? We'll see. Should be a lot of fun over the next couple of days and weeks as the NBA playoffs continue. And back in hour number one, former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. Always enjoy talking Jags with Clay Harbor as we recap the Jaguar offseason and look ahead to rookie minicamp. That's right, the Jaguars are on the field for rookie minicamp, I believe, starting Thursday. We will be down there on Friday taking in Jaguar rookie minicamp. Hope to have some interviews for you that evening right here on Hacker After Dark. J.J. LaSelva was your producer tonight. J.J., great job as always. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Tuesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Tuesday evening, and we will do it all over again tomorrow night on a Wednesday, beginning at 6 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.